ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Titled Purusha Shukta Confirmed. We're going to read text 2. And then I'll also take text 3 because text 2 does not have purport. Survasunam Chavayoscha.
Survasunam Chavayoscha.
Tannase Paramayane.
Tannase Paramayane.
Ashvinor Osadinam Cha.
Ashvinor Osadinam Cha.
Grano Moda Pramadhyaya.
Grano Moda Pramadhyaya.
I'll just read the translation directly. His two nostrils are the generating centers of our breathing and of all the airs. His smelling powers generate the Ashwini Kumar demigods and all kinds of medicinal herbs, and his breathing energies produce different kinds of fragrance. Please kindly repeat responsibly. His two nostrils,
his two nostrils
are the generating centers,
are the generating centers
of our breathing,
of our breathing
and of all other airs.
His smelling powers
generate the Ashwini Kumar demigods, and all kinds of medicinal herbs. And his breathing energies produce different kinds of fragrance. Chakshur Diva Suryasya Chakshini Karnau Disham Chatirtanam Shrotram Akashasabdayo. His eyes are generating at the generating centers of all kinds of forms, and they glitter and illuminate. His eyeballs are like the sun and the heavenly planets. His ears hear from all sides and are receptacles for all the Vedas, and his sense of hearing is the generating center of the sky and of all kinds of sound. Please repeat responsibly. His eyes are the generating centers.
His eyes are the generating centers
of all kinds of forms.
Of all kinds of forms.
And they glitter and illuminate. His eyeballs are like the sun, and the heavenly planets. His ears hear from all sides, and are receptacles for all the Vedas. And his sense of hearing is the generating center of the sky. And of all kinds of sound. Purport by His Divine Grace, ISKCON Founder Acharya Abhay Charanaravinda Bhakti Garanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
The word Tirthanam is sometimes interpreted to mean the places of pilgrimage, but Srila Jiva Goswami says that it means the reception of the Vedic transcendental knowledge. The propounders of the Vedic knowledge are also known as the Tirthas. Very powerful purport, just two lines. It's so much. Om Agirati Mirandasya Ginanjana Shivakaya Chakshura Milita Medanasmari Shivare Namaha Shri Chaitanya Anamrishtam Stapitam Medha Bhutale Swayam Rupa Ganamayam Nadati Swavanantikam Hey Krishna. Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpati Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhadu Sita Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakamba Dhruvesha Kripasi to deliver the pious, to destroy the miscreants, to re-establish religious principles, I appear in this world millennium after millennium. So a few days ago I was on book distribution in South Africa, in Cape Town, on the street, and I tried to approach every person. Just, you never know who's going to take the book, you know. So, there was one lady dressed in this gown, the university gown, the graduates, you know. And she was coming down the street and she was looking like very happy and very like proud, almost like an elephant, proud, you know, walking down the street, you know, with that gown, you know, I own the world, that kind of thing. So I thought, let me approach her. So I went to her very humbly and I said, my dear lady, you look so intelligent, so wonderful. Can you please kindly take one of these books? You know, I'm presenting these wonderful wisdom books here. She looked at me and said, I don't believe in all these things. I've got my own beliefs. And she just walked away. So I was thinking, I wonder what's her belief. Some minutes later she came back. So I said, now is the time. I have to ask her, what's your belief? So I approached her. Madam, sorry, please. Can you please tell me what's your belief? She said to me, what I believe, you don't believe. So what's the use of me taking all this? Again, she used the same thing. Said, but I'm sure there is something in your belief that I will believe too. So please tell me some of your beliefs. So she said, I think what we do, you don't do. So we actually slaughtering. You know, in our culture, we're slaughtering animals. So I don't think you do all these things. I said to her, of course we do. We are slaughtering false egos. She was like that. She was bewildered. What do you mean? I said, we are slaughtering the false idea of who we are. And I told her that everyone in this world is under the concept that we are this mortal body. That we are this temporary mortal body. And we are so much absorbed in being controlled by this body. And I told her that actually, in very brief, that we are not this body, because the body is made of matter. unconscious. And this body, although it's material, it's conscious. Why it is conscious? Why any other object, material object, is not conscious? But why our bodies are conscious? What makes them conscious? She couldn't, of course, answer. So then I told her that our books teach this science of the self and the science of the real self, of course, the science of the super self, the relationship between both. And this topmost knowledge is actually slaughtered in the false ego. She was completely amazed by my answer. And I said, this is our sacrifice. You are performing slaughtering of animals for sacrifice. We are slaughtering false egos for sacrifice. And then I told her the story of Jagai Madai. And she was amazed, completely bewildered by the story. And in brief, I told her that Jagai Madai wanted to kill Nityananda Prabhu by hitting him in the head with a crack pot. And so they hit him once, and then I think Jagai or Madai wanted to hit him second time, but Jagai stopped him. So Lord Chaitanya heard about this incident, and of course he's the Lord, he can appear immediately, whatever he wants. So he appeared on the spot, seeing his friend, his brother Nityananda Prabhu, in such a condition, blood streaming from his forehead. He became furious and he decided, I'm gonna kill these two rascals. So Nityananda Prabhu, my dear, he said to him, my dear Lord, if you kill them, then you have to kill everyone in this world, because everyone is such a rascal. So please, remember, your mission is not to kill the body, but it's to kill the demonic mentality. So Lord Chaitanya told him, if one drop of blood falls from your head on the ground, I will kill them. So Nityananda Prabhu immediately covered his head so that the blood will not fall to the ground. And when these two demons, Jagai Madai, when they saw the compassion of Nitai, that the very person they wanted to kill is protecting them, that slaughtered their false ego completely. They fell on the ground, trembling, in ecstasy, and begging for mercy, like that. So, this is what our movement is actually all about. The mercy of Gaur Nitai. And since we are followers of Gaur Nitai, followers of Srila Prabhupada, who is their direct representative, then our mission is exactly the same as the mission of Krishna. Parinitranaya sadhanam vinashya cha duskritam. First of all, slaughtering our own false ego, because we cannot really help others unless we, you know, defeat the enemy inside. Few days ago in Cape Town, again on book distribution, I met one young man and I had a conversation with him, and then this man took a book and I took his number and he took my number, and sometime later he phoned me the same day or the next day, and he said that I've read your books before and I am very interested, and I'm now just kind of in dilemma what to do with my life, so I want to explore more Krishna consciousness. So I told him, come visit our temple. So he started coming occasionally, daily visiting, started to chant, started to do service. But he told me he has a habit of smoking a little bit sometimes. But since he started coming to the temple, he stopped. And he was doing quite well. So one day the devotees took him on book distribution. And he went on book distribution, and by the night they returned, I learned that he distributed one Bhagavad Gita to someone, that same person. So everyone was in bliss, and you know, he was like very happy about his achievement. The next day, the devotees were preparing to go on book distribution. So I happened to meet him while he was just about to go out. And when he said something to me, I smelled cigarette smoking, you know, like this smell coming from his mouth. So I told him, "My dear sir, you can't go on books." He said, "Why should I not go?" I said to him, "Because you're not qualified to go out. If you go out on books, you have to represent the book. You can't just go out like this and misrepresent the book. We don't care about spreading the books, but not following the books. We care about actually living the books. And we don't care about the money that the books will bring. We don't care about anything. We just want to see that whoever distributes the books lives according to the books, teaches the books, follows the books. So I want you to become like the books before you start going out." So he was a little upset, but I was very firm. And at the same time, very kind to him, because I know if I let him out, I would encourage something wrong. And then they will think that these Krishnas are just after money or sending these books out, but they don't care about the people or something like that. So I told him, "I want you to sit here and study these books the whole day. Prasadam is provided by us. You study the books. When you're ready, when I see that you're qualified, then we can send you out on books." So he became happy. So like this, this is actually what our movement is all about. We are representing the parampara. Make no mistake, we are not just some kind of upstarts that do something different or some speculation or whatever. We are following in the footsteps of our predecessors. And the first book distribution party was Srinivas Narottam and Shyamananda. And even recently, I don't know whether it's true or not, but some scores came out. They did some book distribution, Srimad Bhagavatam, this, that. So we're not doing anything different from what they're doing. We are performing a sacrifice. We're slaughtering the false ego. That lady became very happy, actually. She took a flash, said, "I must come to the temple." Probably she didn't have money to take a book. She didn't say. She just grabbed the flash. She said, "Wow, that sounds interesting." And she just walked away. But that is her first contact with the Absolute Truth. She had never heard anything like this before. So when I go on book distribution, I've been very fortunate to have done this service since 99. And I've taken part in every book marathon, and as much as possible I try to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. I'm not a very big book distributor, but I have my own way of doing, my own style, and I feel like I'm benefiting the people in that way, in my small, insignificant way, just like the spider was carrying the sand, you know, when Hanuman was throwing rocks in the ocean so that the monkeys can cross to Lanka and around the army. So I'm also doing it. But even one small spider who is actually serving Krishna is very valuable. It's very valuable. Especially for the Lord. He told the Hanuman's friends, "Don't worry, don't disturb this spider. He's just doing his best to throw some stone there, you know, so some sand to build that bridge. Just leave him. Let him be." So even that little spider actually represents the mercy of the Lord, because he is trying to help the Lord to achieve his purpose of going to Lanka and destroying Ravana like that. So this shows us how respectful we have to be towards each and every Vaishnava devotee of the Lord, because everyone is part of the same team. Sometimes when Kali becomes prominent amongst Vaishnavas, then he tries to disrupt the loving relationships between the devotees so they cannot execute the purpose of Pranitranaya Sadhanam Vinashya Chaduskritam. Kali tries to put the players of the same team against one another so that the team can become dysfunctional, and then the Maya's team can win. It's like a soccer match. There are two teams. We are Krishna team and there is the Maya team. So sometimes some agent comes in disguise, wears the Krishna team t-shirt, causes disturbance so that the Maya team can score. Or sometimes even a person from the Krishna team can be influenced by someone in the Maya team and he can start playing against his own team. So we have to be very careful how we are actually applying ourselves to this process and how we are a team player in the mission of Lord Krishna, of Lord Chaitanya. So, what is parampara? Parampara means to present the truth as it is. Krishna explained to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita that whenever there is a discrepancy, you know, this knowledge, you know, when it is lost, then he comes and he appears to reestablish this parampara. Evam parampara prapto idam rajashyos vidu sakalene ekata yogona sta parantapa. That this knowledge actually is passed down from one king to another, or from one devotee to another, and the knowledge that comes from this parampara is the topmost knowledge, is the king of knowledge, the king of education. Raja vidya raja guhyam pavitram idam uttamam pratyaksha vagamam dharmam susukam kartum aveyam. It is the topmost knowledge because it liberates the soul from illusion, from darkness, from incarnation, from suffering. And there is many humanitarians these days. They try to do things to help humanity, but I read this morning in the purport, Prabhupada said this is just simply an expression of the false ego. Sattva guna, if someone is in sattva guna, it is still an extension of the false ego. So if someone is trying to help people on a sattva guna platform, that is still it is still within the Mahatattva, and it's still, it cannot liberate the soul. Therefore, it is incomplete service to the person. Yesterday, I was at Fitzroy Street. I was doing book distribution there for some time. And then one gentleman appeared with a little tin, and he was collecting money for homeless people, for shelters and something like that. So I was thinking, on an external point of view, we're doing the same thing. I'm distributing books and I'm getting some Lakshmi from the people for these books, and we are printing more books and we're distributing, with feeding people, whatever, doing food for life. But actually the one action is an expression of ahankara, and what another action is expression of devotion, of bhakti. So the carrying the tin to actually collect for homeless people is simply making them more homeless, because the real home is the spiritual world. He's not taking them to the spiritual world, he's making them comfortable in the prison. So instead of helping them, you know, the person is simply encouraging their homelessness, their forgetfulness of Krishna. You make them comfortable in prison, they don't want to go out. So, Bhaktivinoda Maharaj used to say that sometimes prisoners, they so much like the prison that when their sentence is finished, they go out, they do a crime to get back inside. It was so nice. In the prison, you get free food, you don't have to work hard, you watch TV, whatever, you know. So, apparently, one prisoner cost to the state something like, some years ago, maybe now it's double, was about $35,000 to $40,000 a year, one prisoner. But now probably it's much more. This is probably about 10 years ago information, because I heard it from Bhaktivinoda Maharaj, 2001, 2002. Probably now it's $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 per inmate. So You know, our activities are not ordinary because our activities are really putting the person directly in contact with his home. We are actually just like agents that are looking for the lost sons and daughters of a father or a mother. We're actually down on the street looking for them to bring them back to the father. That's what our activity is all about. And so what I generally do when I go on book distribution, since we're still in the marathon, I can tell you in brief what is my approach, how I manage to connect with people. And I found it, especially in the last marathon, has been very successful. In Cape Town, I went maybe for 1 week on book distribution, maybe it was more. Within 1 week, 10 people came to the temple from my book distribution alone. Interesting. And 2 people became devotees, the one guy that I told you, and then another lady from Mauritius. She started chanting as well and reading Prabhupada's books. And then some people became supporters of Food for Life. They came with us on Food for Life. And they're making plans now to connect the University Shoko program for outreach, for feeding programs, whatever, with our Cape Town temple. And there is, we have a nice structure, nice representatives now. They're working together. So a lot of the people were Muslim, from Muslim background, but non-practicing Muslims. Very interesting, because today a lot of the, in the Western society, a lot of the Muslim people are moving away from their culture, the youngsters especially, because they kind of disillusioned in some way or other. So I found they have some values, they have some goodness in them, so they want to contribute, they want to do things. But when they get exposed to Krishna, then their contributions, their service becomes spiritually focused. So, what I tell the people is, you know, when I meet them, I say that we're, you know, I stop them the usual way. Hello, sir, how are you doing? Nice to meet you. You look like a very intelligent person. Or, how are you? You look like a very wonderful person. Whatever, madam or sir. My name is Praja Krishna Das. I'm a monk and I'm presenting this ancient wisdom for modern times. And I tell them directly, this is the topmost knowledge in the world. And then they, what do you mean topmost knowledge in the world? And I say to them, topmost knowledge means the knowledge of the self, the real self, the knowledge of the super self, and the relationship between the both. And I say, in our modern society, people think that the purpose of life is to make money and spend money. This is the goal. Everyone is chasing money to spend money. But that doesn't make them really happy. But this knowledge actually that we are giving is going to make a tremendous impact in your life, because it's going to help you understand what is reality. So I tell them, generally everyone believes in this world that we are this mortal body. I directly tell them, everyone believes that we're this mortal body. I said, you are not this mortal body. I tell them straight, what do you mean I'm not this body? I said to them, you cannot be made of chemicals. This body is made of chemicals, oxygen, hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen. These chemicals have no life in themselves. How on earth can you logically conclude or scientifically prove that these chemicals can produce consciousness? So I say, my body is conscious, your body is conscious, and some object around us like this table, it is unconscious. It is made of the same matter. Same chemicals are there. So why this is conscious and this is unconscious? So some of them say, I don't know. Some of them say, because of the soul. So then I say to them, yes, if someone says the soul, even if they don't say, I say, yes, you're right, there is something mysterious, it's not just about matter. So what actually happens is, in this body there is something else, it is called antimatter. It's something that is completely opposite to matter. It is a conscious energy that is eternal. It doesn't have a beginning, it doesn't have end. You are not born and you shall not die. I tell them straight like that. You existed before your birth, you're existing now, and after the death of this body you will still exist. And some people doubt about the word eternality, because we are mortal beings and nobody of us has seen eternality. Have any one of you seen something eternal? No. But then why are you so convinced there is eternality? If someone asks you, what is eternality? How will you explain? Have you ever thought about that? So it is important that we think very clearly about Prabhupada's books. So I generally, my argument with people like this who say, you know, you say there is something eternal, but there is nothing that we could see to be eternal. So how do you know there is anything eternal? I say to them, have you seen anything coming out of nothing? Have you seen anything, something coming out of zero? Have you seen something like that? They say no. So then, although I might not be able to see back in history, millions and millions of years ago, but I can logically conclude that this is eternal because nothing, something cannot come out of nothing. And therefore, if this is here, that means it was always here because it cannot come out of nothing. You see, there was nothing, my dear ladies and gentlemen, and suddenly out of the nothing came something. You know, it's crazy. We don't see anything like that. You can ask someone, my dear sir, come work for me. If you believe in nothingness, I'll pay you $0 and that zero will turn into 100,000 one day. Nice. It's just a good deal. You believe in nothingness as the origin of everything. Come work for me. I'll give you $0. I'll give you nothingness. You can enjoy your nothingness and then it will turn into $100,000. So I tell them, you know, matter is unconscious, there is anti-matter. Prabhupada talks about it in Easy Journey to Other Planets, how two scientists in 1959, two Swedish scientists found the anti-material particle. But of course Prabhupada defeats the argument by saying that they don't understand what antimatter is, because their conclusion was that if matter and antimatter collide, they will explode and annihilate one another. That's in Easy Journey to Other Planets, first chapter. So Prabhupada concludes there and he argues that anti-matter means the soul. So I'm using this term on purpose because modern people are very brain damaged by Richard Dawkins, by Stephen Hawking and so many other, you know, so-called speculators or scientists. So they're very damaged and they deal with these big concepts. And if you tell them it's the soul, you're the soul, they'll say, what is this soul? So I tell them it's anti-matter. Matter is eternal. It cannot be generated from nothing. So the soul is, this anti-matter is also eternal. But the difference between the two is anti-matter. And then I can say some people call it soul or para-prakriti, or spiritual energy. I can use these different terms as soon as I establish the term antimatter first. And then as soon as I establish this principle of antimatter, then I can say this the soul is actually conscious, and that's the difference between the both of them. It is conscious. And being conscious and being eternal, that means that this is not just one life that you're going through. You may think that you're this body and you live in once and you die, but actually there is much greater purpose of your own life. So what is this purpose? The purpose is to understand what is your origin. The origin is not the earth, Mother Earth. You know, I was born from earth, and earth shall I become at the end. Your origin is to actually connect with this Supreme Self. I say we are the small self, we can control this body, but there is a Supreme Self that organizes this manifestation. And in fact, everything emanates from the Supreme Self. So, how do you know there is a Supreme Self? In brief, there is a tremendous design, there is control, there is so much organization in this universe, cannot be explained in any other way. So there is a self, there is a super self, and I tell them this super self can have many names. Some call him Paramatma, some call him God, some say Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh, Adonai, Elohim, Krishna, some say Buddha. Buddha was also one of the incarnations. So I speak to them just not to take all their guards down, not to make us feel that we are sectarian. Even I use an African name. I say sometimes people call him God Nunkulunkulu in Africa. You see? So it's different names of the same person. So now if you understand that the source of everything is a conscious being, then this is very amazing realization. And then I explain to them something before I move to the third point. I tell them that the source of everything must be a conscious being. Because if it was an unconscious being, everything that would emanate from that source will also be unconscious. For example, if I break down this board, you know, this beautiful board into small pieces, because it is unconscious, it will never produce a conscious entity from the breaking it down, right? Because it is unconscious. So, where is the consciousness coming from? And where is this matter coming from? It must come from a conscious source. And I say this conscious source is a complete entity. Om Tat Sat. We say Mother, Father, God. Both masculine and feminine simultaneously. They're just, wow, this is amazing. I never heard anything like that. If it was just masculine, where is the feminine coming from? If it was feminine, where is the masculine coming from? If that is not within the source of everything. If God is it, where is the he and she coming from? Yeah. So, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdati. The supreme conscious source is perceived by different people in different ways, different stages of realization. So these books will help you to understand what is the source, what's your origin. At the moment, you're just flying around, following everyone else in a daze of illusion. You know, you don't really know who you are, what you're doing, where you're going. So, and then I say to them that when we understand that the source is a conscious entity, now we want to connect with that source. This is the goal of our life. This is the purpose of our human life. The animals, they don't think that far. They think of eating, sleeping, procreation, defense. But the human being, this body is very specific. Therefore, you have to question who you are, what you're doing in this world. Where are you going? So the goal of this, of our life, according to these yoga books, I say yoga books because the term rings familiarity with them, and it's a nice term. It's not a religious text or whatever they come. They just, the word religion is, it's very scary to them these days because of the abuse of religion. So I say this, you know, the knowledge within these books explains that the goal of human life, the topmost goal, is to reconnect with Mother, Father, God, with the supreme conscious entity. How do you do that? Through loving service. So as soon as you say the word service, they feel a bit, service, I'm not a servant. You know, in the material world, if you say to someone, when they ask you, my dear sir, what's your profession? If you just say, I'm a servant, they'll look at you and they say, this guy is low class, you know. He's a crazy guy, you know. He's lost in his brain. He's got no intelligence. The word servant is loaded with negativity in the material world. But it's the most beautiful word, actually, in original terms and spiritual terms. Why? Because service, I explained to the people, service is a vehicle for sharing love. Have you seen ever a functional relationship that is not based on service, between mutual service between the two parties? They say no. So I say, whenever there is dysfunctional relationship, you know that one of the parties is not serving the other party. There is some, you know, problems between the two. So that way, service is a vehicle for sharing love. It's not a denigrating word. It's not an ugly word or stupid position. Servant is the highest position. So I tell them that the mother serves the child. The father serves the child because they love the child. The husband serves the wife serves the husband. And the family unit serves the community serves the nation, etc. like that. So healthy relationships are based always on service. So our life is meant to be redirected towards connecting with the Supreme Source through service. And then by actually understanding ourselves and the Supreme Self, understanding we are part and parcel of the Supreme Self, we immediately understand that our position is to serve. And then I explained Prabhupada's example. This is the arm. Is it part of the body? Yes. Is it one with the body? Yes, it's one with the body. But is it the whole body? No, it's not the whole body. So what is the purpose of the part in relation to the whole? So they say, well, to do something. They don't like the word serve. They say to do something. No, it's there. I say, no, it's to serve. Yes, to do something, but it's particularly to serve the rest of the body. And then when the arm serves the body, then immediately the arm is nourished and satisfied. So when you understand that you are part and parcel of the Supreme Conscious Entity, automatically you want to serve that wonderful entity. You want to love, especially if that entity is non-envious and is manifestation of pure love. Then you want to serve that entity, in this case Krishna. You know, we say Krishna. And by that service, loving service, your relationship with Krishna becomes reawakened. And then by coming to this point, you are no longer part of this material reality. You are now liberated from material action, karmic action. You are liberated from birth and death, from reincarnation, because you have reconnected to your source. So this is what our books are all about. If you just read these books, you will attain perfection. If you read them carefully, if you want to keep in touch with us, we have this address. We are just down the road in Melbourne, 10th Street 197. We've got nice people who can explain to you further. Here is our card. Here is my Facebook. Is my email. If you want to drop me a line, is my phone number. You're most welcome. Nice to meet you, sir. Have a wonderful day. And then they just give you some donation. They take the book. They're in ecstasy. And sometimes I take a photo with them. Do you mind if I take a photo with you? They say, yeah, cool, yeah. It is embracing with the books. And I send so many photos like that. Even yesterday I put so many of them. A whole group of students or young people, not students, I think, just young people, maybe in their 20s, they were a little ecstatic due to intoxication, Kali Yuga ecstasy. And then I approached some of them. I just, like I said, I take chance with everyone. I approached some of them that were closer to me. They were coming out of one shop and they said, you know, we have to carry these books now. And one guy saw me, he said, no, these books are amazing, we have to get these books. He just gave me $10, you know. And then they took three books or something like that from the small reincarnation. Can you please sign it to us? So all of them, I was like a rock star signing up books. All that camera splashing, and it was really great experience. So all of them became happy. I took, I think, one person's Facebook, and then they took mine. And so going on Sankirtan is out on the streets. It's an incredible adventure because you don't know who you're going to meet, how you're going to impact on their life. And if people feel that you care, they really, really want to come. And that's what brings people to the temple, when they feel that you care about them. You're not just out for the money, you're not out for the score. Of course, in the marathon, we have to send as many books as possible. So the way I did my presentation now in this class, it took me time. Probably I'm not as focused as I am on the street, but literally what I told you maybe for the past 10 minutes, I'd say it in 2 minutes or even in 1 minute. and they understand what I'm talking about. And then they click and they want the book, you know, and they take the book for its merits, not that it's a yoga book, it's a meditation book or something like that. Then they read one page and they throw it away. So we have to learn how to do book distribution with quality and how to touch the person's heart. Sometimes devotees say that we are preaching, but actually I don't like this word preaching, because it reminds me of Christians screaming on the street that you go in hell and all that. So sometimes devotees use the word outreach. I like it, but there is even a more sweet word that I came up with, heart reach. You actually reach the heart of the person. So in that way, it's a lasting impression that will stay for all of their life. And then Krishna blesses you to make advancement like anything, yourself as well as the other person. And just in conclusion, one other experience comes to mind, just to explain about this heart reach, about the care. I was in Durban in South Africa again a few days ago. I went on the streets and we distribute Zulu books there. This Zulu tribe, if you've seen the movie Shaka Zulu, you know, it's many years ago, 20, 30 years ago, there was a very famous movie about this tribe and the leader of the tribe. So in Durban, most people are Zulu. They speak Zulu language. So the devotees created the BBT Africa and they started translating the books into Zulu language, because a lot of people's English is not so good. They're speaking, but, you know, to understand the subject matter of Prabhupada's books in English for them would be much more difficult. So we had these Zulu books and I got quite a few of them. And I went on the street in the CBD, in the central area, and I was approaching people and one African man stopped. And he spoke to me and he listened to me. I made my presentation. And after that he said to me, you know, I'm so depressed because I went through so much horrible experiences and my wife just gave birth to a stillborn child. You know, basically a child was dead. And he said, I don't know what to do. I'm so confused with life and I'm suffering big time. He was very depressed. So I spent some time with him. I took his number. And he took a book and gave me some small donation. And I sent him off for a while. I walked with him and I spoke to him. And I told him, I will put you up with someone who lives close to you. And then, you know, you can go deeper into spiritual life and get away from this horrible suffering that you're going through. So we parted together. Same evening, I phoned the vice president of Durban Temple, Srinivasacharya Prabhu. Because this is the Phoenix, there are two big temples in Durban. And I told him, can you please contact this person because he lives near Phoenix. He said, all right. So the next day, I was supposed to give class in the Phoenix for Gita Jayanti. And I went in the evening for the class. And then Srinivas Prabhu introduced me, I gave the class finished. And after the class, he got the microphone and he said that, actually, what happened these 2 days was just amazing experience for him. And he told them that I met this person on the street. I gave him the phone number of that person and he called him. And when he phoned, this guy was just on the verge of committing suicide. He was thinking, I'm going to end my life. I can't tolerate this anymore. It's too painful. It's horrible. Probably some other things were going on in his life. So he said, I spoke to him for 45 minutes on the phone and I got him out of it. And then the next day he was supposed to meet with him and get beads and basically getting close to Krishna. So however, somehow other day didn't meet for some time, but then I called him back again and the man was now much more jubilant and happy. And he said, I have this week appointment. I'm going to meet Srinivas Prabhu at the temple, and I actually saw that he's going in the right direction by the way he sounded. So people are really going through a lot, and we are representing Krishna. We are representing ISKCON, and ISKCON is an incarnation of Krishna. Pranitranaya sarvanam vinashana chaduskritam dharma samstapa vartaya sambhavame yuge yuge. So these two verses that we read today, Narada Muni is inquiring from Brahma about the source of everything. He says, my dear father, please explain to me what's going on here. I think you're the most powerful person, but I saw you performing austerities. That means you're not really the topmost guy, because you're performing austerities, you know. So why are you performing these austerities? One who is topmost, he should not be performing austerities, because he doesn't have to, because he's perfect. So Brahma then goes to explain to him that behind me actually is the Supreme Lord Vasudev. And then he explains to him how Vasudev is expanding this material world and facilitating the material, the living entities in Maya. And then he deals with the Purusha Shukta, explaining his Virat Rupa, how the Lord manifests His body in this world for the lilas, the illusory lilas of the materially conditioned living entities, and ultimately how this world is created also for their liberation by Him presenting the Vedas again and again, cutting through the darkness of illusion. So, and the purport here, the word Tirtanam is sometimes interpreted to mean the places of pilgrimage. But Srila Jiva Goswami says that it means the reception of the Vedic transcendental knowledge. The propounders of Vedic knowledge are also known as the Tirtas. So we are all meant to become Tirtas. All of you. Not just Prabhupada or some other great devotee. No. Prabhupada is expecting all of you to become Tirtas. Propounders of the Vedic knowledge by living it, acting on it, and sharing it with others. And Prabhupada used to say, sometimes people go to the pilgrimage of some holy place, whatever, just to bathe. In fact, Bhagavatam is explaining, they're like a cow and an ass if they don't hear from the sadhus that resides at this holy place. Those who are actually presenting the Vedic transcendental knowledge. But these days, by Prabhupada's mercy, the holy places are not just in India, it's all over the world. This is Vrindavan. So when you bring someone here, they can actually get benefited by your association. And Tirtha means the connection between the material and the spiritual world. Tirtha means a bridge. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj said that. His name meant bridge builder. Bhakti Tirtha. One who makes bridges between darkness and bhakti, between the material world and the spiritual world. And if you look at his life, everything was about building bridges, you know. So Tirtha, we have to become Tirthas. We have to carry Krishna in our heart and distribute to everyone. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Ananti koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki
jai.
Gaura Premanande. Any quick comment or question? Yes, Prabhuji.
In the third translation of the third verse, in the sense of meaning is generated in the center of the sky and from the kind of the sun. Can you explain to me?
Okay.
His sense of meaning in
his ears hear from all sides and the receptacles for the Vedas, and his sense of hearing is the generating center of the sky and all kinds of sound. The sky is the ether. The sound moves through the sky, through the ether. And his sense of hearing, the Lord's sense of hearing, is actually empowering the ether to be capable of carrying the sound, specifically the Vedic, all kinds of sound is written here. All kinds of sound, meaning even material sound is empowering to go from the person who produces it to the other. In other words, the Lord's senses can be found to be the origin of everything. So His transcendental senses are empowering our own senses. In other words, we're not independent. interesting, not independent. So mode of goodness, actually mode of goodness is about independence, again, the false ego. But bhakti, trying to serve Krishna by distributing Vedic knowledge, is all about losing the false ego and doing what is the mission of the Lord. So basically his senses, this is what it means. His senses are the source of our hearing. That's what it means. From his sense of hearing comes the ether and the power of our own receptacles to hear the sound that is coming towards us. The Lord is the source of everything. Prabhupada says in the previous chapter that scientists, they argue about the origin of the world. But the power of arguing about the origin of the world comes from the brain, which was not created by them. It was created by the Lord. And they can't create a brain like that or a similar brain. In fact, the brain can do maybe 1,000 calculations at the same time, some type of operations simultaneously, but the computer can do 1 or 2 at the same time, and then it jams or whatever, you know. So it cannot be compared. And also, of course, the computer must be started and created by a person for it to exist. So the scientists cannot come any close to the Lord's potencies. So this is what it means. His senses are actually the source of hearing. Because he can hear, we can hear. And they create sky or the ether is created by through his senses, through his ears, and all kinds of sound. The transmission of the sound can be heard by the recipients because of the construction of the ear, the way the ears are created. So in other words, this body is like a replica of the Lord's body, but in a gross way, gross form. Is that okay? Do you understand that? No? Yes? His divine grace. Nobody asked me about it so far, but you can say to them that divine grace means someone who has understood the origin of everything and someone who can connect you to the origin of everything is divine grace. And you can ask them, do you understand what the origin of everything is? If you are, I can call you divine grace. They'll say, I know what the origin of everything. Okay, then what it is? It's matter. Alright, sir, if it's matter, then can you mix matter and show me how matter can produce consciousness? Or is any one of your friends or any scientists have created that? Consciousness from material chemicals? Not possible. So then you cannot claim to have that title yourself. But this person has understood that the source of everything is a conscious being. Supreme conscious being, and that supreme conscious being is our well-wisher, and he's trying to connect us. Therefore, his grace is divine. This person that was collecting Lakshmi for the homeless people is also grace. It's his sattva-gun grace. You know, he's trying to help others to have a comfortable life in the prison, the material world. Prabhupada is divine because his activities are directed towards liberating someone from the prison. Simply you can say it like that. Say if you're in a prison and someone comes and liberates you from prison by changing your consciousness to become an eligible citizen of the spiritual world, then that person is a real liberator, not someone who can make you more comfortable in the prison. That's what I'm telling you. And ultimately you can say anything. As long as you're not convinced, if you're not having like a strong understanding yourself about who Prabhupada is, they will not accept. But if you're convinced, you can tell them because he's a pure guru, he's a pure spiritual master, he's Mahabhagavat, they'll still accept. Oh yes, yes. If you're convinced. It's all about the conviction. When you talk to people, they sense your conviction. immediately. You know, how convinced you are. Like Radhanath Maharaj told one story about the intuition. Recently he spoke in some big lecture and he said that people can feel actually whether you're afraid of them, whether you're greedy, whether you're lusty. You know, they can pick up on your energy, intuition. And he said that if one is one understands that others can feel their consciousness, then we have to master this art of being confident. And that comes with really Krishna consciousness. The more we understand the books, the more we can teach them with confidence. You see, like that's what I'll say. Yes, last question maybe. Actually, really on the street, I can time myself. Within 3 minutes, I give them the whole philosophy. So some people may criticize me. They say, what will you 3 minutes? But the people are taking the book. So if you criticize me, you're making Vaishnava Para. No, I'm saying, not saying. Someone is criticizing like that, they're making Vaishnava Para. Because to offend the devotees who are distributing the glories of the Lord, you know, is the first offense to the Lord. So if someone says this guy is a rascal, he's preaching to the people and he thinks he's a great person or something, it's an offense. So it doesn't matter whether it's towards me or someone. The general principle is that you should give them the book somehow or other. But for me, quality preaching, quality outreach is the most important. Because you build bridges, you connect with people. Otherwise, the book goes out, you get the Lakshmi, but you don't see the person in this lifetime. It's most of the people are like that. But I tell you something. At the moment, on the streets, there are so many interested people that are actually looking around for something. So many of them. It's not just one or two. And if you spend a little time with them, they connect with you, and very soon you see them with Tilak, with Sika, chanting. So this is the time now when people are sick and tired of Illuminati and sick and tired of New World Orders and sick and tired of, you know, exploitation. People are sick and tired of their jobs, of their families, because it's all incomplete. You know, and amongst hundreds on the street, you'll find at least 5 or 10 of them who will be interested in going deeper into something. And you'll see, I got 2 or 3 people numbers yesterday. They will come around. I'm most sure that they'll come around. So yeah, I mean, during the marathon we can do as many as possible, but why marathon just in December? All year, you go out and help the people. So much scope. It's wonderful. So, 1 second, but the 3 minutes that we speak, if it can help the person to appreciate the book and grab it with great enthusiasm to read it, to create a platform for them, to excite them to read it, that is great. We're not, you see, when Prabhupada says this, your 3 minute, what would your 3 minute of preaching do? He means to say that do not try to substitute my book with your preaching. But if you actually encourage them to take his book with your preaching, then it's great. You see, that's the way to look at it. And I don't have, to be honest, I don't have any experience of someone stopping and I'm telling them this and them saying, no, I'm not interested, I want to go. Most of them take, maybe 99%. If they stop and if they hear this, they take it. This is amazing. different from my understanding is that materialists try to understand the world through logic and sense perception. And can the devotees explain to them the reality through logic and sense perception? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, to defeat that process that's going on in Kali Yuga and material perception, to challenge it in that.
Of course.
To hand back that.
Yeah. To give them the power of logic and the power of sense perception in relation to the Vedas. That's what we do.
Yeah.
If you hear all my lecture, was exactly about that. So,
okay.
So in fact, devotees have written many books like Nature's IQ and Rethinking Darwin, Prabhupada's Life Comes from Life. Sadaputta Prabhu has written books, Druta Karma Prabhu. This is all about evidence, ascending evidence of sense perception and logic that ultimately leads to Shabda Brahman, to connecting to the revelation of the Lord. So we do these things.
That's the great gift of the Chaitanya movement. I think it's so rare in the world that people to find a spiritual movement that has a descending gift.
Yeah, definitely. It is descending, but at the same time, according to our acharyas, especially Jiva Goswami, pratyaksha and anuman, sense perception and logic, can be used as the subservient tools to prove Shabda Brahman. Yeah. Like, I'll give you one example. I saw one documentary recently about, it was called Shades of Light or something like that, and was presenting what is actually light and color. Shades of color, I think. What is color? So when modern science started to delve with the color, was like back like Da Vinci and all these first people there that were in the Western world presenting the scientific ideas, Copernicus, Da Vinci, I think a few others. And then they could see only 7 or 8 colors of the spectrum, whatever. But then gradually with time, when science progressed, they discovered ultraviolet color, they discovered X-ray, they discovered gamma ray, they discovered so many colors we cannot see with our eyes. So I can use this example, for example, to say that there are many things you cannot see with your eyes. For example, you cannot see ultraviolet color, you cannot see gamma ray or something like that, you know. But with your gross eyes, but if you put your eyes under some kind of mechanism, you can maybe examine and see it. So in the same way, if you put your consciousness under the mechanism of Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, studying the Vedas under the guidance of pure devotee, serving the pure devotee and the devotees in general, then gradually you will start to see Krishna. So, what is not seen now will be seen if you just position yourself. So, seeing is not believing, is not the end of it. Because even material things you cannot see, what to speak of more subtle things as the Lord Himself. So, do you understand how I'm using logic to convince someone to look into spirituality?
Some years ago, I was online on the internet and read the Jiva Goswami's bits and pieces of the. Is it read that?
And that's Sanatana Goswami. Shiva Prabhupada ki jai, Gauri Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai.